Good afternoon, I'm Patrick Burke, here with an update from the KPFK newsroom. Time is 3 o'clock. An Italian judge is ordering that Silvio Berlusconi stand trial on corruption charges along with British lawyer David Mills. Magistrates in Milan accused the former prime minister of paying Mills a $600,000 bribe for not revealing details of Berlusconi's media empire when he testified it in 2 court cases. The crime carries a possible jail sentence of 3 to 8 years. Italy's statute of limitations, reduced under Berlusconi's Bush-allied government before he lost elections in April, means he's unlikely to be prosecuted on this count if the case stretches until 2008. Vicente Fox is promising to keep thousands of federal police in Oaxaca until what he calls full order is restored. Mexican riot police, backed by helicopters and armored trucks, continue to establish their presence in the city today after seizing it from protesters. Activists say at least 5 people have been killed by police since Friday, including indie media journalist Will Brad and teacher Emilio Alonso. Protesters had held control of the city since May in protests aimed at ousting Oaxaca's state governor, Ulises Ruiz Ortiz, who they accuse of corruption and repression. Duncan Hunter, a California Republican representative, is announcing his intention to run for president in 2008. The chair of the House Armed Services Committee, who was first elected to Congress in 1980 and is running for re-election next Tuesday, made his plans known today in San Diego. Hunter raised his profile among conservatives as co-author of legislation for construction of a 700-mile fence along the border with Mexico. 2 state employee unions are suing over Arnold Schwarzenegger's plan to ship more than 2,000 inmates to other states. The suit filed in Sacramento by the California Correctional Peace Officers Association and Local 1000 of the Service Employees International Union says the move violates the state constitution. Plaintiffs say it's illegal for the administration to pay 2 private companies to use their prisons in 4 states to house the medium security inmates. It also says Schwarzenegger overstepped his authority when he declared prison overcrowding to be an emergency. We'll have more on these and several other stories on the evening newscast at 6 o'clock and another update at 4. Stay tuned now for Indie Media On Air.
I'm a walking contradiction like bullets in love. Mixing slur my words with perfect diction. I'm guilty of my convictions. Complicated compositions, punctuated propositions. It's tenacious two-step audio with ambition. Make you rev your transmission in the intersection. Twisting when the henny hits the ground. Sidewalks will be christened. I'm so nervous and sweaty. That this gap might slip out my hand. A homeless dude need a tip in his can. He put his bid in this man. Now it's just bitter, this man. We need a bit of this plan. I'm not just spitting that fan. When I'm running from the police, I don't have to rush. I'm so dope, I just jump in the toilet and flush.
All right, welcome to Indie Media On Air. This is Chris Burnett, and today we are going to be talking about the situation in Oaxaca and the recent killing of Brad Will, an indie media journalist and activist and a member of the Global Indie Media Network, who has been working in many places, Chiapas, Argentina, Brazil, Ecuador, and, of course, recently Oaxaca. And for listeners who've been listening to KPFK, probably already know a little bit about the situation. But Brad was shot by a paramilitary's bullet who's believed, people who are believed to be hired by the governor, Ulises Ruiz Ortiz. And I want to give out the URL to for those who have access to a computer right now. You can follow up and look at photos at nyc.indymedia.org. That's nyc.indymedia.org. We're going to be talking to a number of people throughout the Indie Media Network and hopefully go live to Mexico City where a demonstration is happening as we speak. And before we're going to be joined by Eric from New York City Indie Media. And just before we do that, I'd like to read a bit of the press statement issued by the New York City Independent Media Center. Brad Will was killed on October 27, 2006. In Oaxaca, Mexico, while working as a journalist for the Global Indie Media Network. He was shot in the torso while documenting an armed paramilitary assault on the Popular Assembly of the People of Oaxaca, a fusion of striking local teachers and other community organizations demanding democracy in Mexico. The members of the New York City Independent Media Center mourn the loss of this inspiring colleague and friend. We want to thank everyone who has sent contributions to our office and posted remembrances to nyc.indymedia.org. We share our grief with the people of our city and beyond who lived, worked, and struggled with Brad over the course of his dynamic but short life. We can only imagine the pain of the people of Oaxaca who have lost 7 of their neighbors to this fight, including Emilio Alonso Fabian, a teacher, and Esteban Zarita, a local demonstrator, who now face an invasion by federal troops. And it is believed at this point there's up to 6 people have been killed, and a confirmation of a 15-year-old boy who was killed yesterday. And Eric, are you with us? Welcome to Indie Media On Air.
Thanks.
Well, let's start off. What's going on in New York City, and what's your assessment of the situation now?
Well, in New York, we had a protest. It was one of 14 in cities around the country this morning, in which a group of activists, we had about 300 to 400 people in the streets, and a group of activists blockaded the Mexican consulate on the east side of Manhattan for nearly an hour. No one was able to get in or out of the building. And this was in response to a call from the people in Oaxaca to shut down Mexican government institutions in the United States. There are other actions at other consulates today. At this particular one, one of Brad's colleagues from Indie Media, Global Indie Media Network, did a die-in in the street in front of the Mexican consulate, in which he wore a white T-shirt with blood marked in the places that Brad was hit in the chest and in the groin on Friday, which killed him. There were 12 people arrested at this action. 3 of them have been released. 9 are being put through processing now downtown. And we don't know what the charges will be exactly for them. But it was a very successful action. It got a lot of attention. It inspired the people who took part in it. And we're hoping that it's the that today was the first of any number of actions that are going to be taking place in New York City and around the country that will show that in the shadow of Brad's death, Americans and American activists are coming together with the people of Oaxaca in their struggle.
What is the status? What's going on in Oaxaca right now?
As we understand, yesterday the police, the Mexican army troops, and paramilitaries were connected with Governor Ruiz and the PRI ruling party, the former ruling party of the state, retook the city from the People's Popular Assembly, or APO, of Oaxaca. They did it with great brutality. Buildings were destroyed, barricades were bulldozed, water cannons were used, automatic weapons were used. At least one person died yesterday, as you mentioned. And the really obscene thing about this is that the government used Brad's death and that of the teacher who died as well as an excuse to get rid of the quote-unquote rabble who have occupied the city for several months now. In truth, the violence there was caused by the paramilitaries, not by the activists in the streets. But the government's decision to essentially retake the city in a bloody way has caused a huge outpouring of outrage in Mexico. As you mentioned, there's a large demonstration going on in Mexico City now. The lower house of the Mexican parliament has passed a resolution demanding that Governor Ruiz officially resign and recognize the fact that he no longer governs the state of Oaxaca. And so the question that arises right now is whether perhaps the government's action, once again overreacting and doing a form of overkill on the people of Oaxaca, has maybe caused the resistance to spread. And perhaps we're seeing the beginning of a really large mass movement for people's democracy in Mexico.
Maybe you can give us and our listeners a brief synopsis of what's happened in Oaxaca in the last 5 months and what's triggered the people to take to the streets and take the city.
Yeah, Oaxaca is a very is a unique place. In a way, it encapsulates a lot of what's unique about Mexico and also what some of the most severe problems are there. Oaxaca is the second poorest state in Mexico. It is also 70% indigenous population. That's the most the population of any Mexican state that's indigenous. It has been ruled with a particularly iron fist for a long time by the PRI, the former ruling party of Mexico that was voted out 6 years ago. The PRI has maintained a tight grip on that state, and Governor Ruiz is someone who operates maybe one of the most corrupt and violent administrations of any state in that nation. He's run things through paramilitaries, through graft and corruption. The disgruntlement with the government in Oaxaca has been going on for a long time. It's been particularly hard on the indigenous population. This May, a teacher strike took place. There's a teacher strike every year in Oaxaca, essentially, that's always negotiated peacefully with a pay raise. This time, the governor decided to disperse it with force. They were occupying the Zocalo, which is the city square of Oaxaca City. They were dispersed with force. Five people were killed. In the aftermath, the teachers formed an alliance, a remarkable alliance with popular and indigenous groups that have been hoping to break the sort of vice-like grip that Ruiz and the PRI have had on that state for so long. And the result was the APO, the People's Popular Assembly of Oaxaca, which is a very, very promising and creative movement. It's been portrayed in the press in this country as a sort of a loose coalition of interest groups. It's much more than that. It appears to be a genuine effort by people in Oaxaca to form to institute a direct democracy there, a self-governing, autonomous direct democracy, with a horizontal decision-making process that would be unlike anything that's been seen in Mexico on that level for a long time since the revolution, and it's gathered huge popular support. Last month, APO declared that the governor and the legislature of the state are no longer hold power, and declared APO the legitimate government of Oaxaca, and demanded that the federal government recognize Ruiz's the deposition of Ruiz and negotiate directly with APO and with the people on the barricades who have been defending the city, particularly against the Mexican troops that have been coming in, and demand the disarming of Ruiz's paramilitaries. That's the standoff that essentially is taking place now. As I mentioned, it's been very inspiring to people throughout the country. 11 other Mexican states now are attempting to set up people's popular assemblies like the one in Oaxaca. They've linked up to some extent with the next campaign by the Zapatistas, which is touring the country now. I should really emphasize that while Brad went down to a place that's very dangerous and very volatile, he also was in Oaxaca to cover what seems to be the emergence of a real, directly democratic system there that's generated by the people themselves. It's a tremendously hopeful thing, and very much deserving of the support of people in this country. Brad was there to document that and that reality, and to defend what the people and APO were trying to accomplish there in getting rid of the corrupt regime that's had a grip on that state for so long. So we have a situation in Oaxaca that is under grave threat from the government, but really desperately needs the support of people in the United States to say no, let the people form the system they want to form, and let the government get back and negotiate with them rather than attempting to suppress them by force.
Now, there has been actually Brad was filming up to the point that he was shot.
Yeah.
And the camera was still in his hand and, in fact, caught video of the people who probably shot him. I've read reports that they have been taken into custody, and it turns out two of them were city council members.
Yeah.
Two were apparently local police officers, and another was an official of a nearby town.
That third person, that last, I believe, shot Brad and the other members of the paramilitaries.
Can you repeat that? I think we lost you a little bit on the phone there.
Sure. The last person, who was a former mayor of one of the districts of Oaxaca, was a a member of the paramilitaries and is believed to be the person who shot Brad.
Okay. You don't know what the status of that situation is, do you?
He's in custody along with the others. We don't know what they're being charged with, whether they will ever be charged with anything, whether they will even continue to be held for very long. Given the system there, these people are hired thugs of the PRI and the people who've traditionally run Oaxaca, and whether they will ever face any punishment, we don't know.
I'm wondering if we might be able to play track one of that CD and get that audio that was on the camera. That was audio from Brad's camera, and it's a pretty disturbing thing to listen to. And also, you can actually watch this online. But I think it's important that people understand the position that Brad put himself in on behalf of the people's struggle. Antu is also joined on the other line with us from New York City, and I'd like to welcome him to the show. Antu, welcome to Indie Media on Air.
Thank you. How's it going?
Good. Perhaps you can give us an update as well of the actions in New York and other thoughts about Brad and the situation in Oaxaca.
Yeah, so the Indie Media Center has been feeling really distraught and really angered over this whole thing. Brad was there doing video for his own and for Indie Media Centers at large, which he's played a large part for. One of the reasons he was there is because other people wouldn't go there. And that's why perhaps he was shot, because no one else took the chance or the courage to cover the struggle. So today in New York City, there was a demonstration, like Eric said, organized by lots of friends of Brad Will. Lots of people came out to it, a couple hundred. It started small with some chants. Around 9:30, someone started climbing a pole and a banner was dropped that said, "A Night on the Barricades," which is something Brad wrote in one of his last pieces. I think it's a line from one of his songs. And right as that was happening, someone else locked down to the front gates of the consulate with a bike lock. A couple other people tried to lock down too. There was a big scuffle. It was hard to see what was going on. One of the gates broke off the door. They kind of had to close all the doors immediately. No one could get into the consulate, so it wasn't occupied, but it was blocked. People went to some of the side doors and locked down to that too. As this was going on, Indie Media videographer named Brandon Jordan, he got in front of a car and laid down. He was dying, and blocked traffic for a while. And this was kind of all intense and going on really fast. And there was a lot of people from Indie Media there, not just covering it, but also showing solidarity with this and willing to put themselves in jail or on the line to show the solidarity for Brad, not just for Brad, but for all the journalists and for all the people that take the chance to cover these stories. There was another photographer. Her name's Erin Siegel. She was arrested as well, taking photos. Even a New York Times photographer named Muhammad, his camera was taken away from him today. And we just see this continuous repression of the freedom of press. And it keeps on popping up and up and up again. And it's funny how Indie Media, people from Indie Media, take it upon themselves to kind of push it in the show that they're not afraid to put themselves, you know, in the line of justice, even if they're willing to go to jail.
I'd like to read a little excerpt from an article by James Daria, which was on Narco News, which I found today, and it was called "On the Streets of Oaxaca, the People Remember Brad Will." It's the subtitle is "The Other Journalism with the Other Campaign in Oaxaca," and he writes, "Doing independent media work in Oaxaca has always been difficult. The amount of distrust and hatred of the corporate media puts all media workers into a dangerous situation where one is liable to confront verbal and physical accusations of manipulation and lies. Trying to explain the role of the alternative or independent media often falls on deaf ears. Covering the current events in Oaxaca since Brad's death has been a completely different experience, however. In the barricades in front of the monument to Juarez, heading away from Oaxaca City towards Mexico City, the people gathered there held a moment of silence in honor of Brad. One woman made an important remark. She said that he went everywhere the oppo went. He was at their side because he wanted to tell the truth about what was going on. He was in the street with the common people of Oaxaca, who were fighting for justice, and when he was shot, it was the oppo who was by his side and tried to help him. And when he died in the arms of Apo. She remarked about how he gave his life at the service of the Oaxacan people, and the Oaxacan people respect his presence. The fact that someone from the United States would come to a place like Oaxaca and fight alongside the Oaxacan people is a testament, according to her, that people can be good despite differences in nationality, color, and economic status. Eric, do you care to comment on that?
Yeah, I think that it's really important to understand that the reason Brad was down there was, first of all, because people in this country have not been given correct coverage of what's really going on down there. They're told that that a group of disgruntled teachers who want more money and a bunch of rabble have occupied the center of the city, and that it is understandable that the government and respectable people would want them to be cleared out. People in this country and the mainstream media have received no clear idea of the extent of the movement that Apo is a part of and the significance of it to people in Mexico, and how to what extent it really represents an attempt to really change society down there. And Brad was down there because he's always gone to places where direct democracy and social justice movements have come to the fore, and he's been there to document them and support them. And the fact that Brad was there tells you a lot about what was going on just by itself, if you have any acquaintance with the work that he's done over the years. And in a certain sense, Brad put himself in the hands of the people of Oaxaca. That's who he trusted to protect him and to make sure that he was all right. He took a calculated gamble that the movement would succeed, and that the movement would grow and get stronger, and that he could help them do that. That was why he was there. And I think that people need to look at what's going on in Mexico over the next few weeks or the next few months very much in that light, that Brad was there trying to call attention to a really powerful popular movement.
And Anto, would you like to add anything to that?
Yeah, that piece you read was really encouraging and touching to all, I think, indie media journalists, by capturing the ethic of what it means to do independent journalism in a place of fear for all media. And because we see how in Oaxaca especially, how central the radio has been. It's one of the last strongholds. It's one of the last places where Apo kind of can get their message out. And that's kind of a place where the police are trying to attack. And what Brad was doing, what he's done in other places, is try to facilitate that kind of communication of images, of sound, of stories, of words. And to hear that the people really kind of took that in and that they were touched by that, you know, it's really amazing.
You know, there was another point in that article that I didn't read, which was that it was sort of commenting on the fact that it takes an international journalist outside of Mexico to be killed for attention to be focused on that area as well, and that we can't forget about the deaths of the people who were there as well. Emilio Alonso Fabian, that we know of, and Esteban Zarita, a local demonstrator, and others whose names I don't have right now. Do you have any comment about that as well, Anto?
Yeah, I mean, Brad would be the first to tell you, you know, I can't believe all you are now finally figuring about this because some white guy just got killed. I mean, that's kind of what he would, he put it back right in our face, perhaps, and it's right. And I think some of the movements here, you know, at least in the wake of Brad's death, that emphasis on all the deaths has been central, at least from what I've been seeing. But in any of the mainstream reports, no, I mean, Oaxaca hasn't been covered one bit. And this happens in all news stories. I mean, look at the way we cover Iraq. We cover when Americans are killed, not when Iraqis are killed. So I think it's a good criticism, but I think Brad would be one of the first ones to make it.
And have you paid any attention to the corporate media response? And what are they saying?
Well, some of it gives us hope and some doesn't. We've been actually talking with some corporate media because they're really confused. I mean, this comes up and they don't know what's going on. They don't know what indie media is, or they get it wrong. And Oaxaca, they don't understand what it is. They ask us to understand it, or they interpret it themselves, or they just read what the governor tells them. Some stories didn't get his name right. Some stories said, you know, he was, like, didn't know why he was there, or Indie Media was just a website. It wasn't a network of journalists all over the world. And it goes both ways. Some of the most recent stories have been really troubling. They've been focusing on the police returning to restore order, and with the people cheering them on. And the people cheering them on were like 20 people, if you read later in the article, out of the 80,000 that were kind of fighting against them. One of the worst things about the article was the fact that they call it a shootout between two sides. It wasn't a shootout at all. It was them shooting one way with people who had rocks. And it also it failed to kind of condemn the people that shot him as part of a larger structure sometimes. It said they were plainclothes people. It didn't embed them with the government, which we now know to be true.
I think it's worth pointing out that on Saturday, when it became clear that the government was going to move in and send the troops in, one of the leaders of OPPO said that OPPO members would continue to be on the barricades when the government troops moved in, but that they would not resist, that they would not use violence, and that's exactly what they did. They did not use violence, but they were greeted with overwhelming force. So that tells you something about the solidarity and the commitment of the people in Oaxaca and versus what the government versus the government stand. And it's shocking that the mainstream media has insisted on portraying OPPO and the people in Oaxaca as being part of a two-way street of violence, when that's absolutely not the case.
It's my understanding that when the federal police moved in today or yesterday over the weekend, that the people abandoned the barricades and began to move away as a commitment to the nonviolence that they've committed to the whole time, and now are in a sense surrounding where the city center is. Is that accurate?
From what I know, from what I read, they nonviolently resisted the removal of their barricades. They didn't nonviolently leave. They nonviolently resisted with their hands, with all they could. And, today we know that they had a massive march, and they went back to the Zocalo, the city center, peacefully. And I'm not sure if they retook it or not, but it's strong, and they've come back to show their force. I mean, in May, when they had their encampment in the Zocalo, the police came, cleared it, and the next day the people took it back. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens again.
What is the strategy that's being developed, as far as you know, going forward in terms of Indie Media, the network globally, New York City Indie Media? What are you urging people to do, and how can people plug into what's going on in New York City? And of course, in Oaxaca and around the network. Eric or Anto?
I'll leave that one to you.
Yeah, well, our strategy right now is to get the story right, and to get as many people to understand what Brad was actually doing there, and to not turn it into a story about just some guy who was nice and friendly and got killed by accident, but rally as someone who was fighting for social justice and was killed on purpose by paramilitaries. And we want the story to get out there in a way that furthers the struggle for the people of Oaxaca and furthers what Brad was standing for, which is freedom and justice and direct democracy. People can plug in by checking the website, nyc.indiemedia.org. They can call our phone number, which is on the bottom of the website. If we don't recommend going to Oaxaca unless you are or understand what's going on there. There are media centers in Mexico City where it's much better to go or safer to go and to learn about what's going on there. We recommend people to write their own stories and be the media and to not look for the corporate media for all the events all the time, but rather to kind of search the web or search the alternative press to see other ways that truth can get out.
And I just want to I want to thank you both for joining us today on Indie Media on Air in Los Angeles, and to congratulate on the great work you're doing, and in spirit of Brad and his support of the people of Oaxaca. I'd like to just read the last paragraph of your statement. And encourage people who can get a chance to read it. It's clearly linked on the front of New York City Indie Media. And you say, still, those of us who knew Brad know that his work would never have been completed. From the community gardens of the Lower East Side to the Movimiento Sem Terra encampments of Brazil, He would have continued to travel to where the people who make this world a beautiful place are resisting those who would cause it further death and destruction. Now, in his memory, we will all travel those roads. We are the network, all of us who speak and listen, all of us who resist. Thank you guys for joining us today on Indie Media On Air.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. This is Indie Media On Air, and I'm Chris Burnett. You're listening to KPFK in Los Angeles at 90.7 FM and in Santa Barbara at 98.7 FM and on the web at kpfk.org.
Tune in every Monday night at 7 p.m. to hear IMRU, the nation's longest-running lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender news magazine.
2004, when the California Supreme Court ordered the San Francisco marriages halted, over 4,000 couples had been wed.
How does someone know if they're bisexual? What's the coming out process like?
Coming on the heels of a 6-0 decision by the California Supreme Court last Monday that a lesbian couple had been illegally denied full couple membership.
That's IMRU every Monday night at 7 p.m.
All right, welcome back. This is Indie Media On Air, and I'm Chris Burnett. And now we are joined from Mexico City by Greg Berger, who is in the middle of a demonstration, I believe. Welcome to Indie Media On Air, Greg.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. Why don't you tell us where you're at and what's going on?
I'm in the middle of Mexico City right now. Thousands of people have come out to show their anger, to show their support for the people of Oaxaca who were brutally repressed yesterday, as you know. Repression has been going on for months. But yesterday, as you know, the center of Oaxaca was taken by the militarized federal preventative police. And now I'm in the middle of a march in Mexico City of thousands of people who have converged on the Interior Secretary, which is really the all-powerful domestic agency here. And they are banging on the doors of the agency, demanding an immediate withdrawal of troops from Oaxaca. It's a very exciting moment.
What are the people saying? What are they asking for? And what are their signs say? What are they screaming?
Well, they're saying Yacayó, Yacayó, Ulises Yacayó, which has been since the beginning of this movement the slogan of the movement, which means Ulises has fallen. Ulises has fallen. Ulises is the governor of Oaxaca, the illegitimate governor of Oaxaca, and they are saying that their resolve to get him out has not waned at all. That's what they're saying. And their demands are that the troops get out. And they're also convening not only a popular assembly, that the popular assembly of the people of Oaxaca continue, but they're convening a popular assembly of the people of Mexico that they just announced later this month will meet, later in November will meet to conform its bylaws and bring the movement of Oaxaca outside of Oaxaca to the rest of the country.
Greg, you're there as an independent journalist and you're filming. Have you worked in Oaxaca or have you been a part of Indie Media?
I've been to Oaxaca many times. Many people in Indie Media are friends. I share material with Indie Media. I myself am a documentary filmmaker. I also contribute to Narco News, narconews.com. But I am not personally an Indie Media affiliate.
And your experiences in Oaxaca, I assume you've been there within the last 5 months. Can you give us a sense of what the transition is between the beginning of the occupation of the city and today in Mexico City?
Well, to begin with, this began as a teacher's strike in May. The democratic wing of the teachers' movement has always been particularly strong in Oaxaca. And there have been many human rights abuses under this governor, Ulises Ruiz, and they were demonstrating for higher wages when he tear-gassed an encampment of protesters in the center of Mexico City. There was already so much resentment boiling under the surface of social movements, indigenous groups, radical groups, supporters of López Obrador, supporters of the Zapatista other campaign, a broad, broad spectrum of people, and I should also just say regular neighbors, housewives, plumbers, teachers, came out to form an encampment to reinforce the teachers' barricade, and they remained there for months. And also started to take over several different institutions and started to talk about bringing this concept of indigenous democracy, what they call usos y costumbres, which is basically governance by indigenous traditions, to the forefront of the movement of the APO, the Popular Assembly of the People of Oaxaca. It's evolved, it's become really a competition between competing forms of democracy, a dysfunctional, broken system of democracy, which the state government of Oaxaca and the Mexican federal government espouse, and a different, new way of doing democracy, which is actually much older than the Mexican Constitution itself. That's what it's about, and that's why it's so threatening to the people in power. And now it also threatens to bring down Felipe Calderon, who won an election, presidential election, through fraud, and is going to be inaugurated next month, and is really afraid that the thing that's going on in Oaxaca is going to increase and will take him out. And he's right to be afraid.
And I assume there's a lot of crossover between these groups, as you describe. So you have the other campaign, you have the resistance against the elections, the fraudulent elections.
Yes.
I'm sorry, we're hearing a lot of explosions in the background. What's going on right now?
Yeah, that was actually a member of the protest contingent launching a firecracker into the air. That's traditional in Mexico to tell people that something important is going on. There's no bullets being fired. It doesn't look like that's going to happen at this moment, but it could escalate.
Right. Well, my question was that a lot of these groups are obviously coming together, and it looks like Oaxaca this weekend and the death of the three or four people, including Brad Will, on Friday was sort of a spark. What kind of synergy is happening between these groups?
That's a good question. Under the APO, you know, the other campaign talked about different organizations coming together with one common goal, which is to destroy the rotten, dysfunctional government of Mexico and to destroy the form of capitalism that exists in Mexico. That being said, the APO has actually, in Oaxaca, achieved a lot of the goals of the other campaign, which is to get people talking to each other, listening to each other, and working together. You have people who are anarchists, you have people who are Marxists, and I am afraid to even say Stalinists, but they're under one banner, they have one common goal, which is to create a different way of doing politics. So it's not always easy. As I say, there's a lot of difference between people who support López Obrador and Zapatistas of the other campaign. There's a lot of difference, a lot of different political views. Nevertheless, APO is, I think, in Oaxaca, is the first sign that they're starting to work together and will begin to work together throughout the country.
Right. How many people do you estimate there?
I would estimate that there is a minimum of 10,000 people here, but there could be upwards of 40,000 people.
And is there talk of continuing this demonstration throughout the day and the week?
Well, there will be another demonstration tomorrow on Los Pinos, which is the equivalent of the White House in Mexico. There's also a permanent encampment in the center of Mexico City outside the Mexican Senate where 18 people are on a hunger strike. I just talked to some of those members of the hunger strike, and their resolve is as firm as ever. In fact, they're happy because they know that the federal government has made such a bungle to enrage the people so much that they know that they're going to win. So, yes, there will be continued activities in Mexico City as well as in Oaxaca.
And what's your do you have information on the official government response? Have they put out official statements, or what are they saying?
Yes. Vicente Fox made the laughable statement this morning that the operation yesterday in Oaxaca was a clean operation, a nonviolent operation. That's absurd. As we know, at least three people have been killed. If you go on narconews.com, you can see video footage shot yesterday. You can see, in fact, that a nurse who was killed by the PFP. I think they're saying things which are completely which are a complete disjuncture from reality.
Right, and I just want to give that website out. It's narconews.com, narconews.com. If you want to see that. What has López Obrador said anything as well?
López Obrador did make a statement decrying the pre and the pon, the two political parties of the state and federal government, respectively, that were involved in this whole tobacco. But that was before the actual crackdown. Today I had not heard any statement that he has made. I should note, however, that he's going to have a ceremony on November 20th here in Mexico City to inaugurate himself as the legitimate president of Mexico.
And there have been Zapatistas' statements in support of APO, and allegedly there may be solidarity roadblocks in Chiapas on the 1st of November.
Yes, Yes, and I don't have it confirmed, but I've gotten word that actually a road leading up to the U.S. border was closed. The other campaign, including Subcomandante Marcos, are near the border. They're near Juarez, and there are, I have not gone on and confirmed it, but there is, I have heard during the course of the march that the Otra Campaña, the other campaign, has called for roadblocks within Zapatista territory, a general strike in a few days, and also roadblocks throughout Mexico in a few days.
Well, we can follow that story and confirm it later. Any last comments that you'd like to make while you're in the streets of in DFA in Mexico City?
Well, I want to dedicate the work that all of us are doing out here today to Brad Will. I got to meet and work with him a little bit in Bolivia. I saw him in New York several times. I'm from New York, and I just saw him a couple of months ago. I think that it's unfortunate that he had to die for the mainstream media to catch that this was actually a story. And I think that I'd like to dedicate the work we're all doing to him because his death has proven that people in independent media are going where people in the corporate media dare not go.
Well, Greg, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Indie Media on Air.
Thank you. Keep covering this story, please. There's a lot more that's going to happen.
Okay, and we can read your reports or stories from narconews.com. Is that correct?
I'll be contributing stuff. That's correct. I'll also have other material, but it'll be linked from Narco News.
Okay, great. Yes. Thanks, Greg Berger. Thank you for joining us today on Indie Media on Air.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, this is Indie Media on Air. I'm Chris Burnett. We're going to continue this discussion about Oaxaca, the death of Brad Will, and others in Oaxaca. In just a minute, we are going to bring online Sasha, who's going to give us an update of his work with Brad in Miami during working on the Miami model, as well as a sort of a critique of what's going on in the LA Times and what they've written. Perhaps we can play one of the tracks that was on Democracy Now! This morning, which is a really good short piece on track number 3. Can we do that?
John Gibler as well joins us on the phone from Oaxaca, an independent journalist who knew Brad Will. John Gibler, can you talk about Brad?
I met Brad in Chiapas when the Zapatista's other campaign began last January. We traveled together with a number of other people for about a month as we were filming, or he was filming. I was mainly conducting interviews and writing for ZNet. About the people, the everyday people who are coming out to join the Zapatistas movement there. And then I saw him in the streets about a month ago here in Oaxaca for the first time since then, and we went off to get coffee and talk about what was going on. He said he'd been trying to get here more or less since the state police came in the June 14th crackdown, but it had taken him time to work up enough money to come down here and take time off work. And that he was most interested in filming interviews with just the everyday people and the people that he thought their voices would slip through the cracks in international media coverage and not get out to the people that he was hoping would be paying attention to what was happening here in Oaxaca. At first, he was saying he was really nervous. He didn't want to walk around to the barricades at night until he'd kind of got a feel for the town, which I thought was definitely very wise, and spent a couple of weeks just going out and hitting all the barricades, all the protest encampments, and conducting hours and hours of interviews with people. I saw him in several of the mobile brigades where we joined the people who would commandeer city buses and go around to spray paint government offices. And he was definitely fearless once he'd gotten a feeling for the town and just going wherever the action was. But he was also, being smart. He was hanging out with all the national and the local press corps here who know the scene pretty well, but you can only be so smart when paramilitaries jump out of houses with machine guns. Hmm.
Gustavo Esteva, you also knew Brad Will. You also, in addition to founding the University of the Land in Oaxaca, are a columnist for La Jornada, the Mexican newspaper.
Yes. He was coming to our office. We were collaborating with Indie Media, and he was fantastic. He was. I liked the guy a lot. He had a peculiar genius for reporting, And he was, of course, very courageous. Yes, he was prudent, as was just mentioned, but he was very courageous. He had no limits on his activity with the people. And he shared this element of being unarmed and doing his things and being attacked by these people. Yes, he had a peculiar genius for reporting.
All right, that was a piece from Democracy Now! That was really good this morning, and you can get more of that story and that show at democracynow.org. That was Gustavo Esteva and John Gibler. I'm now joined in studio, actually, with the local IMC collective member, James. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show, Chris.
Of course. And let's talk about what happened today at the Mexican consulate.
Well, I'd say about 50, 75 people were there picketing in front of the entrance to the consulate, which is in MacArthur Park. And they were yelling things like asesino, and they were pretty angry about what's going on down there.
And what's your assessment of the discussion that was happening on the streets in front of the consulate? What were people talking about?
Well, the people that I spoke to were primarily, it's an indigenous movement, so most of the people there were Spanish-speaking. There was a lot of Spanish-speaking media. There was zero English media. And, they are angry. These are their friends and their family. They told me that there's over 100,000 people from that region that live in the Los Angeles area.
From Oaxaca.
Yeah, so they're getting phone calls of friends and family who were there being, you know, impacted by the violence and what's going on.
And what did they talk about? What was their? Did they have stories about their family and friends here and what they're doing in response?
Well, they're planning to be a vigil there the entire week. They have a demonstration planned for the Day of the Dead. They're going to be there this evening and throughout the week to try to bring a presence. So currently they're mobilizing for a big mass demonstration on Thursday at the Mexican consulate.
And we also are joined on the phone by Sasha, another IMC volunteer. Sasha, are you with us? Welcome to Indie Media On Air.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for calling me up.
Well, let's hear what you have to say. I know you worked with Brad in Miami, and what was that like, and what was going on then?
Yeah, I met Brad in Miami in November of 2003 during the mobilizations there against the Free Trade Area of the Americas, which was a proposal to extend NAFTA throughout the hemisphere, which has since largely been stalled and almost to the point of defeat, really. And, you know, Brad was there shooting video and working together with all the indie media video makers and some of the other independent video producers that were there to kind of cover that story. And he ended up contributing a lot of footage to an indie media feature-length documentary that was done about the Free Trade Area of the Americas and the Miami mobilizations and whatnot, which is called the Miami Model. And again, you know, I didn't know him well, but I think what's interesting is that it kind of speaks to the way that a lot of people have said about him, which is that he, you know, was both someone who, you know, traveled to a lot of different places to kind of cover what was going down, especially in Latin American politics, but also he remained involved both in his local community in New York and also, you know, would come, you know, to a place like Miami in the U.S. where the sort of the political meetings that were happening there would have huge impact both on people here in the U.S. and throughout the Americas, and so that he was basically there to try and, you know, help cover that and get out the voice of the people that we knew wasn't going to be covered in the corporate press. And, you know, surprise, surprise, I think that weekend nobody in the U.S. heard anything about the Miami mobilizations, which were pretty massive and which were the first protest that was domestically policed by the Department of Homeland Security, and they used a lot of really brutal tactics there. No one heard anything about it because, you know, Michael Jackson was dominating the news that weekend or whatever. So, you know, Brad and everyone that he works with and the Indie Media Network and all the other independent journalists, you know, need to be out there doing their thing.
Yeah, no doubt. We have some, I think we have some audio from today's event at the Mexican consulate. Can we just cue that up and we'll go to that in a minute? Great. Okay. Sasha, you were commenting earlier about the LA Times article I didn't get a chance to read it. Perhaps you can do an analysis on it for us.
Yeah, well, it's been interesting because I've been following the corporate coverage and whatnot, and obviously, for the most part, the corporate media hasn't covered the situation in Oaxaca very much at all. And then it's unfortunate that, it has to be the death of, someone from the U.S. that will even enable them to open up any coverage. The L.A. Times, what's interesting, I think, that I just wanted to share with, listeners, is that the first story that they ran, which was at about 2 or 3 in the morning, I guess now it's a day and a half ago, really, was interesting because it was just three paragraphs long and it had kind of bare bones information. It just said that three people had died and that the federal police may be arriving and so on. But it was interesting because that story did talk about Brad as being affiliated with Indie Media, and even I think gave the web address of Indie Media. But by today's front page article, which is by Sam Enriquez and Reed Johnson, Brad has, not that Brad should be the entire story, I'm not trying to say that, but it's just interesting that he fell now to near the end of the article in like the second to last paragraph, and they just refer to him as American journalist Bradley Roland Will, and they say that he was a photojournalist with an internet-based alternative news agency, and he was shot in the abdomen while trying to conduct interviews at a street barricade. So it's really fascinating that, even though they know that he worked with Indie Media, they removed the name and website of Indie Media from the coverage that they're doing, although that's not surprising. It sure is poor journalism when they had more specific information, which they're now withholding. And part of that may be because they don't want people to go to alternative news sources like Narco News and Indie Media and actually see more in-depth, coverage of what's actually happening. So they, again, they failed to mention that he was assassinated by paramilitaries linked to the government. They continue to follow the spin tactic that the Mexican government is trying to push, which is that, the federal police had to be sent in because things had turned violent, failing to, go into the fact that it's because of even the police's initial response to the teacher's strike, which then took things to the level they're at now, and that then that the deaths of people there have all been, deaths at the hands of people affiliated with the state. Pretty much what you'd expect. They're kind of covering that there's conflict there, but they're pretty much failing in terms of going in depth about why people are out there, what the demands are, and really just downplaying the role of the state in the violence that's taken place.
Well, I want to remind listeners to go to nyc.indymedia.org. That's nyc.indymedia.org, or locally at la.indymedia.org, which links to a lot of the other news sources that Sasha is referring to. I'd like to play a quick clip for a minute or so that James recorded today in front of the Mexican consulate here in Los Angeles. If we can go to that, that would be great.
What's your name?
Odilia Romero from the Frente Indígena de Organizaciones Binacionales de Indígenas. Is by National Front.
And what is this event here today all about?
We are here with the different indigenous communities as a way to express our feelings, our anger, towards the cowardice action of Presidente Fox, authorizing the federal preventive police to enter Oaxaca and massacre our indigenous people, because that's a massacre of people. And also, we are here in solidarity, just to denounce the assassin Vicente Fox, Ulises Ruiz Ortiz, of the killing of the journalist like Bradwell, and the most recent, which is Francisco Flores Amanueva from Noticias, that was killed this morning, because this is just too much.
Do you think they're deliberately targeting journalists?
Of course, it's a practice that the governments have used for years. Because those are the people that are doing their work, informing the community of what's going on, giving the voice of the people out, because we know that corporate media is not going to speak up on behalf of the poor, on behalf of the hardworking people, only independent media is. So those are the two target people that have been killed. I haven't seen anybody from any corporation being killed.
Is there any corporate media there covering it?
there is a corporate media there, international media, international independent and corporate media. However, the corporate media has been distorting the information. They're claiming there's peace, everything is peaceful, the evacuation was peaceful, but no, because there's two people dead, two children. And I say children because they're 12 and 15. They had a long life ahead, and President Fox gave the okay to kill them.
So what's the current situation in Oaxaca?
The latest, we talked a while ago when we did the phone, phone call to Oaxaca, was in Juxtla Huaca, in the region of the Mixteca. They are also surrounded by PFP, so it's not only in Oaxaca City, it's also in the rural areas like the Juxtla Huaca, Huajuapan de León. They're being surrounded by the PFP, and also they are being targeted. Some of them are dressed as a common person, and they're just waiting for a repression in a minute. But still, the people are not giving up, and that's one thing to really point out is that they know that the PFP is there, that there are PRI infiltrators in Juxtla Huaca harassing the communities, but the community said, no, we're not going to give up. We're going to be here until the end. And like Ulises says, they're supporting us up in the rural areas. That's not true, because the people are manifesting there as we're speaking. There's a manifestation in Juxtla Huaca, in Huajuapan de León, as well as in the Sierra. They're manifesting that they're against Ulises because he's used that saying that the Sierra Norte is with him. That's not true. The Sierra Norte is coming down of the Sierra to protest and manifest that they're not with him.
So are you saying that he's pitting the north of Mexico against the south?
No, he's putting the Sierra Norte in Oaxaca, which is a Zapotec region. He's saying it's a very peaceful, more like philosophical, cultural area of Oaxaca. And he's claiming that that northern part of the Sierra Norte of Oaxaca is supporting him. But that is not true, because all the towns in the Sector Cajono, Sector Sogocho, are coming down and saying, no, you're not going to use us. So the people are not giving up. There are military there, but they're not going to give in.
I see. So what can people do who want to help about the situation for the people in Oaxaca?
One, please send food, phone cards.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to wrap this great audio up, James. I want to thank you for coming in and bringing this onto the show. And people can get it at la.indymedia.org.
Right, they can download an MP3 copy of it.
Great. And I want to thank all our guests, Eric, Antu, James, Sasha, and Greg Berger, and our producer, Alan Minsky, and engineer, D'Angelo Jones. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening to Indie Media On Air. We'll be back.
I'm a walking contradiction like bullets in love. Makes it slur my words with perfect diction. I'm guilty of my conviction.
You've been listening to Indie Media On Air on radio powered by the people, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and live throughout the world at kpfk.org. More revolutionary radio and voices from the front line is up next. Keep it tuned.
Might slip out my hand. A homeless dude need a tip in his can.
This is Margaret Prescott. I would like to invite you to join me every Tuesday morning from 7 to 8 for Morning Review, the Sojourner Truth Edition. We'll be bringing you news and views on the impact on women, children, and men of U.S. domestic and foreign policy, and how diverse communities respond locally, nationally, and internationally. If you don't want business as usual, if you want to find out what's really behind those news headlines, and if you want a world